You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode. Another? Is that a word?
I don't think so.
Another?
How much coffee did you have?
Did not enough, obviously. Another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are joined by the host of the Pennsylvania Woodsman podcast all the way out there in PA, my good friend Mitchell Shirk. Mitch, dude, how we doing?
Well, I think the best way to summarize that is, I know you're not much of a country music fan, but
I am. Wrong? Dude. Okay, listen. This is where, what does the Bible say? You're a Bible guy, right? Do not pass judgment on others.
Hey, judgment is only if I'm casting sin against you, and I haven't said found it's sin against to listen to country music or not. So I won't. I'm not judging, but I will say the fact that you're telling me you like country music, that's like an answered prayer. So that's a good thing. I mean,
I got to fill you in real quick. I was that guy that I grew up on Dr. Dre and the Chronic CD, yeah, the big marijuana leaf on it, but I also grew up on 90s country Garth Brooks,
yeah,
like jukebox music, right? You know, like Clint Black, and then of course like all of the older guys, you know, like Willie Waylon, you know, all the legends, right?
Yeah.
And so my, back in the day when you could pull songs off of Napster.
Okay.
That was the era that I lived in. So we were straight up stealing music every day and putting together CD mixes. And then we'd pop those in our car and that's what we rode around it. And mine was like Notorious Big, Garth Brooks, Clint Black. And then we would have like Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, Incubus, and then back to like Dr. Dre and like Travis Tritt and like just all like Alan Jackson and all of that stuff. So like there was no theme with me. I was a mutt when it came to music.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So then you'll know this song. So the way I would describe how life is going, you know, the song that Alan Jackson sings, Summertime Blues, where the whole song is basically, he's trying to do all the fun things he wants to do, but life is getting in the way. And, you know, he wanted to go to Burke, but told the boss he was sick. Now he can't use a car. Didn't work a lick, all that stuff. I feel like that's life right now. And I'm saying it is positive, I want, but I'm thinking like, I am so jacked up for hunting this year. Like I wasn't last year at this time. And this year I am on fire thinking about the fall, my planning, my scouting. And every time I think I'm going to get an opportunity, like, I'm going to go scout, I'm going to go do this, I'm going to go do that, I'm doing this preparation, that, it's like, up. Oh, never mind. Got to work on this house project. Oh, never right. mind. We got to go. We plan to go visit with somebody else. In another state or at the other end of the county, or we got this party that I forgot about. And it's like, okay, well, I'll just keep putting that stuff on the back burner that I want to do, and we'll keep doing the stuff that I have to do. That's been life right now. But I say that completely positive. I'm not in a bad mood about it at all. It's just life.
Right. That's a fact, dude. Baseball's getting ready to be over. The only little detail here is baseball's getting over, and dude, football now is starting August 1st. And so we have 1 week of nothing, and then but then like we've already had all this August plans and things like that. I didn't think football was going to start until like halfway through August, or maybe when school would start, but that's not the case. And so football is getting ready to start. And so I am coaching two teams this year. My oldest son and my youngest son, they're football teams. I got to get my daughter to wrestling and work with her on wrestling. So it's life is full throttle right now.
So like with football, like I remember when I played, we went right into two-a-days, and that's the way it was. Well, now, like, I don't know what it's like for you guys out there, but I feel like they have wussified the sport so much between, mm-hmm. oh, we got to have heat acclimation week. And if it's a certain temperature outside and the heat index reaches a certain point, we can't go practice on the turf. And we have to have a modification with our pads. And like some places, they don't even do two-a-days. Like I know places in the Midwest and then the South did three-a-days. There were schools in my area that did three-a-days. Now we do two-a-day practices. If that, most of the time, it's just one. I'm like, what are we teaching people? It's okay to be a wussy. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I love it how we're saying, hey, remember when we were wussies? But at the same time, during those two-a-day practices in the 90-degree heat, like kids are throwing up because of dehydration and we're calling them a pussy.
Well, that's just being stupid. Just don't be stupid. Stop drinking soda when you go home from just drink some water and Gatorade. That was
I know.
You got to learn the hard way, but we keep
I know.
Being soft. And
I know. I get it. So eventually, we're going to talk about bear today, which is crazy because I've never hunted bear in my life. But you're like, the email you sent me or the message that the conversations that we had, you were so jacked up about bear hunting that I then became jacked up about it. And now we're going to talk about it today. But before we get there, I'm going off the rails with you.
I expect nothing less.
Okay, here we go. Mitchell Shirk has committed a heinous crime and is sitting on death row. Okay. You get your last meal before you're executed. What is your last meal?
First thing I was going to say is you go cynical right away. Why can't we just say right before resurrection? How about we say that? That'll be a little.
No. Okay.
No, my last meal. I wasn't prepared for that. I gotta be real. I love Italian hoagies. I would get like a 2-foot Italian hoagie with hot peppers and mayonnaise and lettuce, tomato, onions, and just devour that thing. Something so simple as that.
Just a nice hoagie. Do you have a specific location where it would be from?
Oh,
or is it homemade by somebody?
Absolutely. It's one of those small mom and pop shops in Pennsylvania that nobody knows about, but they make the absolute best sub. So I would absolutely go for something like that.
And what's the name of it? You got to shout them out so everybody knows.
Well, there's a couple of them that I really like. It's hard to pick one. The one I go to on my Wednesday travel for work, I go to North Central Pennsylvania in a place called Benton. And there's a shop there. It's called Hoboken Sub Shop. And I really like their subs. So I'll shout out to Hoboken. How about that?
Hey, there you go. Hey, if Hoboken, can't wait for the giant influx of people that are going to be you know, flocking to your store to get one of these hoagies. So
that would be amazing. All
right, cool. I like that. I like that. I like that shout out. I like that meal. Okay. Here's the deal. Next question. You are sharing a hunting property with somebody. You're not close to them. You don't talk to them. They hunt the gun season there. You hunt the archery season there. There's never been really any conflict. There's never really been any real interaction there. But all of a sudden, one day, your cell cameras get dropped down to the ground and you're catching people in the act via your cell camera and your phone. And then you text them and they admit to it. Okay. What does Mitchell Shirk do at this point?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is probably set my phone down and I'm going to talk to somebody who can understand my frustration that I can verbalize without a filter, and I will have no repercussions for it because I'd be hot. But being hot and irate with anybody that's involved in a situation with anything in life, in my opinion, will get you nowhere. In fact, it causes bigger problems. So I would want to figure out as quickly as possible, number one, how can I de-escalate myself from derailing? And then number two is how can I channel that into somehow doing what I don't want to do in this situation but have to do, is loving my neighbor in this situation and handling it in a loving manner. I'm not saying I would do it well. That's what I would try to figure out, is how to do that.
Yeah, that's a good answer, because I felt like I took the high road. I vented. Don't get me wrong. I had a scenario like this play out last year. I vented. I called the landowner. I was like, hey, listen, this happened. The landowner reached out to the other group of people. They made up some excuse, basically lied to her about what was going on. And I got pissed, but then I tried to call the guy. He didn't answer my call. And he basically said, I don't want to talk to you. And then I just ended it, right? And so now I'm in a scenario where I'm kind of afraid to put trail cameras out on this place again.
Yeah.
And because I know that they got away with it once, they're going to do it again. And now I'm just kind of in a weird spot where I don't want to let someone else's behavior affect how I do things. But at the same time, I don't want to, you know, have stolen or damaged property for something that I've really worked hard on doing. You know, like the time and energy it's taken for me to get the money to, you know, get these cell cameras, or the hours that I've put in to get these cell cameras and stuff like that. So, or these trail cameras, it's not just cell cameras. And so I have taken the high road, Mitch. So you should be proud of me, but I don't know if it's a repeated offense this upcoming year, what the high road looks like for me.
I don't have a good answer for you there. The one thing that keeps going through my mind, you know how in the English language, we'll have words that'll have dual meaning. I'm trying to think of a word off the top of my head. I can't even think of one right now, but someone told me this one time, and I don't know if it's exactly true because I don't speak Chinese, but somebody told me that in the Chinese language, there's a word with dual purpose, and it has a meaning for crisis, and it has a meaning for opportunity. And I thought the interesting part about that is, if that's true, a dual purpose word within the same opportunity, the same setting, you've got an opportunity in a crisis for an opportunity, for a new opportunity. And I think whenever we look at a situation like that, I think you've got more hope and positivity out than just getting, you know, basically pissed and irate, which I've done many times in my life. So, I mean, the way I look at it, if it were me in your shoes, the first thing I would think about is, well, how can I hunt this property without a camera? And if it's still going to be a headache, you know, it used to be really hard for me to walk away from places I hunted because you get so attached to it. You love hunting places. There's history, there's experience, and you want to keep hunting there. And I've gotten to a point where if there's something that's going to take the fun away from me, I'm just going to go find something new, because there's so many more other opportunities out there that I have found. And I thought, why did I take so long to walk away and do something different?
Yeah. 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 That's a struggle, especially when it's a place that I've hunted for almost 20 years.
That's very hard. Oh, that's even harder.
And now where I live, it's either lease ground, buy ground, or I don't want to get into it. It's just really frustrating.
Yeah, I get it.
It's extremely frustrating. So, okay, cool. Last question. I wrote Mitchell Shirk a check for $10,000, but I said, you have to spend all of it. It's almost like Brewster's Millions. Have you seen the movie Brewster's Millions?
No.
Okay. Well, they hand him like, I think it's $10 million. And they say, you have to spend every dime of this in 48 hours. And there has to be a receipt for everything. And you have to have no assets and you have to have nothing less. So that's the basis of the movie. I don't really care about the asset part of it, but I write you a check for $10,000. I said, you have to spend it on, you can't take the high road and go, well, I'm going to pay off $10,000 worth of my mortgage. You can't do that. Okay. You have to blow it on something fun. What are you blowing $10,000 on in 24 hours?
Oh gosh. Well, the first thing I'd try to do, and I'm not saying I'd do a good job, but I would try to do is I'd probably try to tithe 10% of it because it's a gift. Mm-hmm. So with the remaining money, oh my gosh, Dan, I have no idea. I haven't thought about toys for a long time. I'd probably put a new bow on there and bells and whistles on that. Mm-hmm. I haven't bought a new bow in almost 10 years. Probably some blind tree stands, boots, a lot of the high end stuff that I've cheaped out on for a long time. Yeah. I feel like it wouldn't take long when you start going down that rabbit hole to get rid of $10,000.
Oh yeah. Like $10,000 doesn't seem like a lot of money these days. And I guarantee you I can blow through $10,000 on hunting gear and equipment. Like I'd just go to Facebook Marketplace. I'd buy like a used side by side right away. Mm. And then,
you know what? I buy an e-bike. I don't have one and I want an e-bike. That's what I'd buy.
There you go. A good one costs like $6,000, dude.
Exactly. I'd buy a mid-drive that has some power.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. What else? Oh, and I would start it by taking my wife out to a really expensive dinner.
Attaboy.
And then, or I could go this route. Hey, sweetie, I'm going to take you and the kids away for a weekend. I take her out on a real expensive, dinner. And then with the $7,000 left, I would go like on an elk hunt or get a guide or something like that. Blow my Wyoming preference points, get a guide, and then say, I'm gone for 2 weeks. And then
that's another good idea.
There you go. All right. Now, all we got to do is hope that check comes in the mail, my friend. 10 G's.
All right. Hold on a second. Hold my breath.
Got it. All right. Before we get into today's episode, though, I do have to do a quick shout out to all of the brands that help support the Nine Finger Chronicles. And we're going to start with one of the longest running supporters of this show, and that is Wasp Archery. Man, I love Wasp Archery, Mitchell, because these guys, they're a great group of people, first and foremost. The second thing is I've found consistency with their products. I have found a brand that I can trust, right? Their broadheads have allowed me to put some good shots and some bad shots on deer and recover those animals, right? Even on bad shots, they do a lot of damage. And so huge shout out to Wasp Archery. If you're looking for a mechanical or a fixed blade, most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States. So you can go to wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Vortex Optics. I'm trying to hold my tongue here about Vortex because they told me, Dan, we're going to send you a product and you can't talk about it until like mid-August. And I'm just like, that's not good. I don't do well with secrets. I want to tell everybody about it. But there's a couple new products that they're launching. I have it. I've messed around with it. It's pretty freaking sweet. And I'm excited to share that with you. These guys have rifle scopes. They have red dots. They have spotting scopes, binoculars, range finders, everything that you need in an optic, along with their apparel line, sunglasses, and one hell of a customer service team. Go check out vortexoptics.com. Mitch, finally next week, I'm going to be able to do some deer chores, get out there, freshen up my mineral sites, freshen up my my mock scrapes, move some trail cameras around, move some tree stands around. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be freshening up my mock scrapes with the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit from Code Blue Scents. Code Blue has an entire lineup of scents and scent elimination products, real and synthetic deer urines, scent elimination products like laundry detergents and soaps. They got my favorite is the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit with a preorbital gel. So go to codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal trail cameras. They just came out with the new Ultra. And so instead of sitting here and telling you guys about all of the awesome features that this camera has, I recently recorded a podcast on the Hunting Gear podcast with the with their marketing guy about the Ultra, all the details of it, how they made the jump from the 3.0 to the Ultras. It's a badass camera. Go check it out at tacticam.com/cameras. And then last but not least, full sneak gear. I have some inventory that's been in. And just because, Mitch, I'm a nice guy, I am going to be doing a 2-for-1 sale here pretty soon. I need to get rid of some of this inventory because I have a couple of new ideas for some shirts that I want to be bringing to the table. And so I'm going to get rid of some of this inventory because my warehouse is my office above my garage, and it's starting to get packed in here, and I need to get some of this stuff out of here. So go to fullsneakgear.com and keep an eye out for when I kick off this 2-for-1 sale. So we're done with the commercials. We're done with the BS and the intro. Why bear hunting? What about bear hunting gets you so jacked up that you had to come to me and you're like, dude, I want to talk about bear hunting?
Well, I've bear hunted in Pennsylvania since I'm 12 years old. I've hunted my whole life for bear, but the bear hunting I've done up until a few years ago was mostly I go to a camp in northern Pennsylvania. We get a group of guys together and we run the mountains and we make drives specifically for bear during bear season. And that was the extent of my bear hunting. But I always had it in my head that I wanted to kill a bear. I really want to kill a Pennsylvania bear with a bow. I haven't done that yet, but I wanted to kill a bear with my bow. And I started going when New Jersey had a moratorium on their bear hunt. A lot of people don't know this, but New Jersey has like one of the highest bear densities in the country. Like they definitely they have like one of the highest densities I think in the east, and I don't know what it's like compared to the western half of the country, but regardless, there's a lot of bear over there, and they had a moratorium on their bear hunt because not to get political, but the governor that was in charge ran on, you know, he was going to close the bear hunting down. There's a lot of anti-hunting people, focus groups over there. So they closed it for a couple of years. Well, the bear population got so out of hand that in 2022, by emergency action, they opened up a season in December, and then they renewed a bear management plan, and now they've got a season for the next 5 years back the way they used to have it. So it just created an opportunity for me to go learn about something new. I mean, I've hunted deer my whole life and food plots and, you know, running mountains and blah, 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 blah. But I just had it. I wanted to shoot one with the bow. And I tell you what, since I started scouting for bear and going after bear, and it's different than what you might think most of the time, because most of the time when you think bear hunting, you think, you know, hunting with hounds, hunting over bait, that kind of stuff. And I'm not doing any of that. I'm hunting them like deer. So scouting and then seeing a bear sneak through the woods. I mean, the adrenaline rushes that I've had doing it, this, it's just lit me on fire. I thought I'd shoot one and then I'd be, you know, right, scratch the itch. Not the case. It's been to the point where it's kind of consumed me like deer hunting has for all these years.
Yeah. Okay. First off, I want to talk about this New Jersey deal. That is absolutely crazy. The compact version of the story is that a whole bunch of people were like, "We don't want to kill bears. We don't want to kill bears." And then bears got out of control and they started like digging through people's trash all the time. Oh, yeah. They were fighting in people's yards. Like, pets were going missing. I'm not sure about attacks on people or kids, but I thought I heard like there was a couple aggressive bears that were like really close to a daycare or a school or something like that. I'm not sure if it was one of those two, but then all the people who were like, "Save the bears," are now like, okay, kill the bears now because we're afraid of them. We gotta stop, you know, this overpopulation. And so now they've kicked that back in. So, did you talk with anybody about the impact on all of a sudden just stopping the bear hunt altogether and what that did to the bear herd, I guess you would say?
Indirectly, I did. Probably the best story that I can tell that kind of led me into this. You know, I'm in agriculture. I work with farmers all over the place in eastern Pennsylvania. And one of the clients that I have has a friend that farms in northern New Jersey. Or he a farmer he's acquainted with in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, whisper down the alley kind of game kind of laid out how much damage he was having from bear in his corn. I was told that from crop damage, they were killing 50 bear in a year for crop damage on one operation. And I mean, like, think about that, 50. I mean, you think about shooting 50 deer for crop damage and people, you know, have a canary a lot of the time in this area. If you shoot that many deer for crop damage, they're talking bear. And I thought, I don't know if that's true or not, but I got to see this for myself. And when I started like doing my research and scouting and seeing sign and looking at cornfields, I believe it. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Dude, 50 bear. Like, you don't think of, you know, you drive around maybe in the wintertime and you see a field full of like 20 deer and you're like, "Oh my God, that's awesome. 20 deer." But 50 deer, and I don't know how big this operation is, but let's just say 1 square mile, right? Let's even make it 3 square miles. 50 bears in 3 square miles just seems extremely high.
It is extremely high. And to kind of give you shed a little bit of light, the first year I hunted there, between 4 of us in 4 days of hunting, and keep in mind, we were stand hunting like we were deer, like scouting like for deer hunting and scout. We saw 34 bear sightings between 4 of us, and I thought that was insane.
That's crazy. 34 different bear, you think?
I think some of them were the same ones, repetitive, yep. And there was a couple of them that had distinguished marks or had cubs with them, and I think they were the same, but still, the frequency, I mean, you hunt Pennsylvania. I mean, I've hunted Pennsylvania my whole life, and I can count the number of bear that I've seen while I'm actually bear hunting on one hand, and I've hunted them my whole entire life.
Yeah. From the conversations that you've had, or maybe even what you've seen firsthand, what kind of impact do that many bears have on the whitetail or turkey or other hunting species in Pennsylvania?
Well, I've kind of been to the conclusion. I shouldn't say I've been to the conclusion. I've been theory, I guess. I have not seen And most of my deer hunting with bear had a big impact up until I started going to high bear density areas. So most of the places I've hunted in Pennsylvania for deer, bear come through, and I've literally seen bear chase deer out of a food plot and then they'll come right back in. And I thought bear don't impact it. They live with them on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. But when I started going to places with high densities, I did start noticing that they will overtake a food source, they will dominate the food source, and it will really reduce the amount of deer that spend time there. So, I mean, you take some of the cornfields that I've seen that were just absolutely demolished with these giant circles of the bear feeding and everything else, you know, the time spent with deer is drastically reduced.
Yeah. The thing that I heard, and I don't know, maybe you have some insight to this. Maybe we get a specialist on at some point, but bear are pretty smart animals, and they will get, they'll be cruising around. They'll smell a deer, and it's almost like they know that this doe is getting ready to give birth. And the second this doe gives birth, they're on it. And yes, they're just hand picking fawns all spring. And so I heard that could have a really big impact, especially if you have a high bear density and a low fawn recruitment. I mean, that can have a huge impact on deer numbers. Because usually what happens, man, I've seen this in the past, and I'll use coyotes for an example. I had a 2 year period, and this was 1 year I had, I think it was 12. Was it 12? In one trail camera picture, I had 12 coyotes in one trail camera picture. Okay. So, and walking in and out of the timber, I would see, in and out of the timber, I would hear, I'd even see coyotes running around. And the following handful of years, I would kind of notice a less number of deer in the area. Okay. The coyotes then, they probably ravaged everything that they could get out of this area, and then they moved on to a new area. And now the deer numbers seem to be coming back up a little bit. Or maybe I know a couple guys who they love coyote hunting, and they have access to some of these places as well. And I think they did a bit of a number on the coyote herd as well. And so it's one of those things where there's ebbs and flows in everything. Cause I'm sure but the thing about a coyote is it doesn't eat corn.
Yeah.
Right. It eats meat and rabbits and fawns and stuff like that. A bear, it's both. So it can stay in an area longer than a coyote can.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the fawn thing's completely accurate. I've seen that in Pennsylvania. I've talked with the state biologists in Pennsylvania talking about, you know, how much loss we have in fawns from bear specifically. There's countless reports. That's 100% true. But yeah, food sources, you know, bear are omnivorous, and the food sources that change rapidly has a big impact on where they're at and ultimately when and how you hunt them.
Right. Absolutely. All right. So initially when you've done your bear camps, it's been driving them like you would do a deer drive here in Iowa.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just line up on one end and push the other, you know, group of guys push towards them.
Yep. Yep. And so is that pretty successful? I mean,
yeah, it's very successful. I mean, and you got to keep success relative to your area. I mean, there's the camp that I've hunted out, there's a long history of bear hunting back into the 60s when they first opened seasons. I think they tallied it up, and like going through the notes in the book, like there's been over 100 bears shot out of this camp. I mean, we average one or two a year, which to some people in Pennsylvania, that's terrible. Some people, that's fantastic. It just depends on your experiences. But I mean, relatively speaking, we always see bear. We always have them. It's just a hard hunting. We're hunting in big woods, north central Pennsylvania, variation in food, very, very tough terrain, very, very thick, nasty laurel and rhododendron. It's a tough hunting environment. So to get one there, I mean, it's an accomplishment. It's pretty cool. We hunt hard for them.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. And then all of a sudden this whole, this idea pops into your head. Hey, dude, I want to shoot one with a bow. Okay. Obviously, a completely different tactic that is now needed to accomplish this goal. Are you using bait? Is this turned into like one of those baiting scenarios?
Not at all. So like in the state of Pennsylvania, when we started getting more liberal bear seasons and we could hunt them earlier with the bow, we can't use scent. We can't use bait. We can't use anything. You're hunting it. You're basically hunting it on your merit. You could do a drive with guys with a bow, and yeah. I know people that have, but you're pretty much hunting them, you know, woodsmanship skill type stuff and scouting and everything else. New Jersey, you can use bait. So Jersey is a bait state. So you can go out, throw a pile of corn on public land and deer hunt over it. But the bear hunting, one of the new stipulations they had is, you know, you can set a bear bait, but you can't be sitting within 100 yards of it. So you can use bait, but you can't be, you know, sitting it over top of it. You can use scents, you can use lures and put that near you, but, it's still very similar to how I hunt them in Pennsylvania when I hunt them with the bow. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's interesting that a state would go, okay, you can use bait on an animal, but you can't be close to it. You can't be close to the bait. So what's the point of the bait other than to maybe draw them in front of you?
It's a stupid regulation, if I'm being honest. They used to allow you to sit on a bait. Like prior to the moratorium, you could bait bears, you could sit on the bait, but you could not sit in a tree stand. You had to be sitting on the ground. And if I'm not mistaken, you couldn't even use a ground blind. Maybe I don't quote me on that. I could be, gotcha. But it had to be like man-made ground to sit there. So when they proposed the new bear plan, I think one way to get it through, and I'm assuming anti-hunters had something to do with this. They didn't want you sitting on a bait. Now, the state is a bait state. You put a corn pile out for deer. Guess what? Bear could take it over. So it's not like they could say, oh, you can't have bait out. Like it's a baited state, but you just couldn't be sitting within a known bait location for bear. That was considered illegal.
Huh. That just don't make no sense, buddy.
It's New Jersey. It's an awesome hunting opportunity, and Northern New Jersey is beautiful, and the people in Northern New Jersey have been great, but it's New Jersey. There's some people that don't make sense, and we get it everywhere.
The people in charge are probably in making the rules and regulations are also not hunters, if I
exactly.
guess.
That would be my guess.
Yep. Okay. My first question is, does a bear have a bed to food pattern?
Absolutely. But it moves.
Okay. So talk to me about that. How do you track down a bear?
Well, what I have learned, so coming into trying to shoot one with the bow, I realized, okay. go
one
ahead.
One second. Trying to shoot one with a bow without using bait.
Yeah. Okay. So what I kind of learned when I started doing this is I'm not a bear hunter. Like I've hunted bear my whole entire life, but I go bear hunting and I wasn't a bear hunter because right. we'd go do the same drives every year in the same area and it didn't matter what the food sources were. So when you start trying to get one 20, 30 yards with a bow and you don't have anything to draw them and entice them, it became challenged. So the biggest thing I learned is, number one, you got to find food. And that seems so simple, but you got to find enough food that you're going to hold them during the hunting season. And their food sources can switch weekly. If a food source gets consumed, they're gone. So I really had to figure out how to find food and how to find food that's going to hold them. And the other thing that I learned, you know, I'm used to deer hunting where you think about whatever square mileage.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit ThompsonCigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
home ranges of a deer. You think, you know, let's just say a buck, some of the numbers I've heard is 3 square miles, and maybe a doe is a square mile or a little bit bigger. So you think about, like in Pennsylvania, some of the public land tracts, if you've got a little bit of diversity there and it's 1,000 acres, you can go scout that 1,000 acres and kill a nice buck. I'm not saying you're going to kill a giant, but you can kill deer. You can break that place down. Well, for bear, the biologist told me a home range of a male is 22 square miles and a home range of a female is 8 square miles. Well, you think of like when you, if you ever go on a map and you map out 22 square miles in the area that you hunt and you look at that, I realized I need to zoom out and figure, and I need to cover a bigger area to try to find food. If I'm trying to find food on 1,000 acres, I might not have enough food to support them on that one track that I've hunted most of my life. I need to go 45 minutes down the road where they have a heck of an acorn crop over there. We didn't have it where I'm used to hunting. Like you got to think on a bigger scale to put yourself in that. So I'm thinking volume of food that's going to hold a concentration of bear.
Yeah. And so there is a little crossover there between whitetails and bear, you know. All these animals have to eat. They have to be protected. When it comes to a bear's nose, is it similar to a whitetail's nose?
I think it's better. I mean, the research that I've heard is their olfactory senses are more so than a deer, that they have better nose than a deer. So, okay. I mean, like you said about the deer hunting, and it's very similar. That's just all I had. That's what I went with. And there's some parallels, absolutely.
Gotcha. So like an access, you find a food source, you go to set up on it. Like, are you really thinking about access routes? Are you thinking about terrain features at this point, like thick cover? Like, how are you making your decisions on where to ambush these bear?
That's a loaded question. I'm going to try to answer as best I can. So like when I think about the places that I killed bear the last few years, I'm looking, the place is a giant swamp. Yeah. And it's a sea of bedding. And then you got corn on a couple different ends of it. So two things I've done. I've hunted the beginning of the season. The first year I hunted close to food and I saw a bear, but we ran into hunting pressure. Well, if you're trying to shoot any legal bear, I mean, the first year a bear is away from its mom, you know, a 2-year-old bear could be 100-150 pounds, which a lot of people, if they never shot one, would be excited. A lot of those bear, even with pressure, they don't care. I mean, I've had bear walk up to me 30 yards because I had, food with me, and you yell at them and they won't run away. So you can hunt close to food and still see bear and shoot bear. And I've done it. But when you start to throw pressure into the mix, and I've seen this with my cameras and I've seen it in person a few times in stand, a mature bear is every bit as hard as a mature buck. And I might argue they're harder, and they're the amount that they're going to move from their secure location, whether that be a swamp full of phragmites and cattails, or, you know, I go into the mountains of Pennsylvania, they might be on a steep ridge with rocks and laurel and rhododendron stuff. They're probably not moving too far from that. But I guess to answer your question, Dan, I am looking for the most food with the closest adjacent cover that I think is going to hold them secure.
Gotcha. And then are they traveling pretty far daily, or are they, you know, with them being an opportunistic animal, like, are they chasing rabbits? Like, are they nest raiders, or what are they doing on a daily basis, and how far are they? Do you think some of these deer or a bear that you were hunting were moving?
I don't think they move far at all when it gets to fall, because the closer you get to fall, the more they're shutting down. They're trying to gorge themselves and, you know, pack on calories. And if they find a food source that has volume and consistency, they are not going to move very far from that food source. And I've found that you can't even really chase them away from it if it's a plentiful food source. So let's just take a cornfield. If it's a 20-acre cornfield and right next to it is cover, cool cover. The one thing I'll say that there's difference with cover is, you know, Bears definitely do a really good job of thermoregulating. They're going to go for cooler places at certain times of the year. So if there's cover that has, you know, water, swamp, shade, whatever, and it's really close to a food source, they're not going to move far from it. And at the same time, when you get into hunting in woods, if the main source is an acorn crop, I mean, there's places where I don't think they move at all, because you'll have laurel, rhododendron, thick cover, and then with that understory cover, you got all these oak trees amidst it. So it's the same problem you'll have with hunting deer, right? They don't have to get up and move far to feed. They'll just roll over and roll in acorns. So, I'm just trying to find where the most congested sign is in that area. Like, let's just say I've got a cornfield and then right next to it, I've got cover. Well, I'm going to walk the edge of both of them and see, is there trails and is there bear scat? If it's there, you're going to know it's there. There's no question that there's a bear using it when you find the volume, but sometimes you got to go miles until you find it.
Right. Okay. And then when is the bear season in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so Pennsylvania and Jersey are very similar in how they have their hunting season. So this year they've cut it back a little bit. They shot the herd back a little harder because they had some more liberal seasons. But this year it's going to be a 1 week archery season, I believe the second or third week of October, and then there's a 3 day muzzleloader season during that week. So it'll start with the bow the first few days, and then it'll open up to inline flintlock, whatever, muzzleloaders for the last half of it, and you can hunt with a bow the whole time. Then we have a statewide bear season that always starts the Saturday before Thanksgiving and goes for 4 or 5 days. And then there's a couple extended seasons that overlap in deer season. But the bulk of it is that November hunt and October. And New Jersey's very similar. They have a 6 day hunt. It always starts the second Monday in October, and it goes for 6 days. The first 3 days are archery only. The last 3 days, muzzleloader adds in just the same. So you have a 6 day hunt there, and then they have a 6 day hunt in December. And those are the two places I've been hunting bear the most.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. So you said you found success the last, 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah. So I went down for the moratorium hunt, which was basically all it was is, November, I found out they were going to try to open this and pass it. They passed it. So I bought a hunting license and I'd never stepped foot in New Jersey. I just decided I'm going to go to an area that people told me about and I'm going to walk around with a shotgun and see what happens. No luck. But the following year when they had a bear season, I started scouting. And the first year I went down, I was determined I was going to kill one with the bow. And I did. I hunted the first 2 days. Did see bear, didn't get shooting. I had to come home, and then I went back down on Thursday that week, and I ended up shooting about 100-pound female. It was a small bear, but it was an adult bear's first year way. Shot it with my bow. I was absolutely jacked up. I actually shot a small buck in the morning out of that tree, took it out, quartered it, took it out, went back to that tree for the evening and shot a bear. So that was really, really exciting, really cool. And then last year, Pennsylvania is unique. We have a
Let me ask you a question. Is it legal to hunt, kill a deer, gut it, leave the gut pile there, and then hunt over top of the gut pile?
Probably not. It's probably be considered a bait. I have no idea. I honestly don't know. That's a gray area. Like, I know in Pennsylvania, it's considered a bait, even though it's which is a gray area because it's a natural thing, right? You're going to gut your deer and then you sit there and shoot a bear. That's considered baiting, according to the law officers that I've had. I never asked it. It's wacky.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, that's good. And then Pennsylvania is unique. We have, our late season for deer hunting is flintlock muzzleloader only, or a bow. So like you cannot use an inline or, a side lock. It has to be a flintlock. So I've hunted with that weapon my whole life and I shot some deer with it, but I got it in my head. I wanted to shoot a bear with my flintlock. Mm-hmm. So last year I went and scouted a whole bunch the way I did the year before, took my flintlock, and I ended up shooting a really nice sow, like a 210-pound sow with my flintlock. And that was another really, really cool experience. And I actually shot her the very first morning I went hunting 2 hours into the hunt, and I was done.
Yeah. Okay. So when you say you just showed up and you started scouting for bear, what were you looking for, as far as terrain, sign? Like, you know, obviously bears don't rub antlers on trees and have this huge indicator. I know that they'll scratch trees with their claws, but, not sure how easy or hard that is to find. So how do you go about scouting for bear?
Well, the first thing I did when I started going to new places, I mean, I did what everybody does, pull the maps up, start looking at maps. And I looked at a multi-county level, because I wanted to see where was land that I could access, and then what's the surrounding area? Is it dominantly mountains? Is it agriculture? Is it suburbia with, you know, houses around these chunks of public land? That's what I looked for. And the first place I started was agriculture. I started going, if there was agriculture in the general vicinity, I was going and seeing what was planted in those fields. Is it a potential food source? And how close is it to those places I can hunt? From there, once I found potential food sources, I'd walk the property. I'd try to walk transition lines where you'd go from cover to food, from cover to open hardwoods, and just see, are there trails that have bear sign? And then the last thing I did is, once I'd find bear sign, I was doing twofold. I was looking for big bear sign. I was looking for, I mean, let's face it, a big bear is going to leave a big pile of crap, and it's going to leave a really big track. So I was looking for those things mostly. And then I started running cameras, and I went to multiple properties and did this on multiple properties with two things in mind for the final steps for me. Number one, I wanted to find a place that had larger bears. Like, you know, I noticed that one property that we found and hunted, it was like a nursery. It was loaded with sows and cubs. And I don't know if that was just where they felt secure and the larger males weren't frequenting there, but I didn't see as much, you know, big male activity. So I kind of went to different places. So I was looking for a big mature bear for one. And then the last thing is, I was looking for places that had multiple wind opportunity. I did this the first year. I picked a spot. The first morning, the wind was good for it, or so they said. I get there, in the first 2 hours of the hunt, it was 180 degrees wrong. And I didn't have a backup plan. And I thought, well, I'm sitting with my pants down. So the next year, I wanted to have places that had what I was looking for as opportunity and size of bear. And the second thing I was looking for is, okay, which of these places that has that, how can I hunt it with a north wind, a south wind, an east wind, a west wind, and get in and get out with minimal disturbance if possible?
Okay. And so from there, then what kind of conditions are you looking for? I mean, are we talking the same kind of condition? Is it too hot to hunt? Are you looking for cooler weather? Are you looking for specific wind directions? Like what is ideal in your head when you're trying to pull this off?
That's a good question. And I don't have a great direct answer for that, because we've discussed that with our hunting partners. So like the first day of the archery season, I didn't go this year because I was hunting with a muzzleloader. So opening day, I didn't go. And it was like 25 mile an hour winds and miserable. And, you know, we had a couple places, like each of my buddies in the camp that we have, you know, we had places picked out. We knew where the best locations were that we wanted to sit. And we had it in our heads that, you know, maybe we just need to stick it out and hunt these places. And we kind of talked about it after the fact that was kind of stupid. We probably shouldn't have went to our best place with, you know, bad winds, bad conditions that just, you know, kind of didn't have the best movement. I talked to the guy who killed the state record last year. I had him on my show, actually. His name's Brian Melvin, for people who have heard about him and shot that giant bear. He actually, when he went in to kill that bear, though, he said, I was waiting for the right wind direction, because the bear, he had it patterned like a deer and was waiting for a wind direction to hunt that specific spot. He needed the right condition in order to hunt it. So the way I've approached it is, look, it's a 6-day season when you have it. So you can't, for me, I'm not going to get too fussy. It's not like I have 3 months to hunt one specific whitetail. I've got 6 days to try to kill a good bear. I mean, I'm not set out to shoot a booner or bust, but I want to shoot a mature bear. So right. I'm going to figure out how I can do that in that 6-day window. The main thing that I am always concerned about, and I'm this way with deer, I don't get too hung up on the moon, the weather, this and that. I mean, there's things I like. The biggest thing and the most important thing for me for both of those species is I got to have a wind that they're not going to smell me on stand. If you've got a marginal weather day, it doesn't excite you, but the wind is good and you got 6 days to hunt, I'm going to hunt it.
Yeah. I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Was there a focus on mornings or afternoons? Is one better than the other?
I shot my first one with the bow in the evening. I shot the one last year with the gun in the morning. I have come to the conclusion with my cameras and some of our hunting, I'm going to try to hunt all day if I can, when I'm around a place that has a good food source, because I have had bear 10, 11, 12, 1, and 2 o'clock moving on camera and moving in front of me. That point where you're thinking about quitting, they're actually active. And I don't have an answer why. I don't have a good explanation. So I don't know that I have a preference either way. I've kind of leaned towards, you know, I do have trail cameras and I do run those. I mean, there was a place last year I can think of, I didn't hunt it, but one of the guys in our group hunted it. There was almost never bear coming to that spot in the morning. Well, we didn't hunt it in the morning. We hunted it in the afternoon. But the place I shot mine, I mean, there was bear from sun up at 7 o'clock until 7 o'clock in the evening. At any moment in time, there could have been a good bear going through that spot. So I hunted it that way.
Yeah. Okay. So you think you got it figured out as far as a couple of these properties, how they move, and then you kind of through scouting have found these ambush points, you found the access route, you found all that stuff. What are some, in your opinion, you know, with this very short window of how you've bow hunted black bears, or maybe some insight you've picked up from others, what are some do's and some don'ts that you had to take into the woods with you?
Do's and don'ts, probably do's is just don't quit. It's really discouraged. You can get really discouraged quickly with bear hunting because you're hunting them like deer. This is from my point of view. I'm not a bear hunter. I'm learning how to bear hunt. I am treating it like deer hunting. So what's your expectation? Well, I'm thinking I'm going to see stuff the way deer happen. And cameras can be an evil thing too, because they give you false hope because you're getting pictures on a camera and you think it's got to happen any minute, and sometimes it doesn't. So I think the best thing that I learned is once you do your homework, all the stuff I talked about and trying to find places, the places I found, if I'm confident this is my best spot, the biggest do, don't, whatever you want to look at is don't give up. I mean, sit your spot out as long as you've got the conditions. And I say conditions, I'm talking wind direction. If I've got a wind direction that's not blowing where I think they're going to come from, and they can come from anywhere, but the dominant place I think they're going to come from and be moving through, you've got to just ride it out in that stand and not be impatient. That's probably the biggest don't. And the biggest thing, I'm going to repeat myself here, but just going on a larger scale and scouting, and you got to cover miles. And like I've had, when I first started asking people questions, what do you got to find? It sounded so simple and so generic. Well, you got to find food and you got to find cover. You just got to, you'll know, you'll see it. And I'm like, what the heck are these guys talking? Like I was scouting and I wasn't finding anything that really excited me. The first time, I'll never forget this, walking into a place, it kind of transitioned. It was an old field that grew up and it was just this thick, nasty briars and brambles, and it was right next to a cornfield, and then there was a hardwood ridge that transitioned, then it went down to a swamp. There was all this like transition in a very short area with food adjacent to it. I walked in there and I was like, I was almost like nervous with the amount of sign I found. I mean, it was like I stepped in bear crap. There was that much bear sign. There was trails. And when you find stuff like that, the first thing I did was get really excited, and I wanted to just, you know, set shop up right there. But one thing I learned in that situation, I know I'm bouncing around, I'm just thinking as I'm talking here, I had to zoom out and look at that area and say, okay, where's the best pinch point to shoot one? Because I don't have bait, I'm not running any of that. And I remember I picked a tree in this area based on cameras, and you know, there was trails there, but I missed an opportunity where, you know, there was two or three trails that came there, but if I would have went 150 yards over, there was a spot where the terrain, there was a point, and those bears were kind of funneling to that point from multiple magnet, like it was a pinch point funnel down to that spot, and they were wrapping around this point, and I missed that at first. And if I wouldn't have missed that in the beginning, I probably would have had even more opportunity. And that's been one of the best spots we've had ever since we found it. So I guess find your sign, but then go back to the basics of what's going to funnel game. Follow trails out and see where there's convergence, whether it's a terrain that pinches into that point. I mean, all the things you've heard with deer hunting, I'm doing for bear hunting, and I'm learning along the way. It's very similar, but you got to think bigger scale and then break it down.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And honestly, that's how I approach the whitetail woods, you know? So it's just same game, different animal, pretty much.
It's a similar game. It's a very similar game. And there's other people like that hunt bear different ways. And like I said, people listen to this, I'm not an expert bear hunter. Don't go to me for bear advice. But what's been so much fun is learning how to hunt this animal without using this. I mean, I've used scents and it's lure, call lures. They definitely work. They'll come through an area. And I've shot bear. I've not killed a giant. I've not killed a big mature boar yet. I've shot mature bear. I shot a sow last year, which is a mature bear, but I want to shoot a 300-500 pound big mature bear. And when you get into that, it's no different than your big mature bucks. They're a different animal. They behave different. I haven't figured them out. I know there's things I'm missing. I know there's things I need to learn. And I'm still breaking that down. But when it comes to finding bear and having an opportunity, Dan, there is nothing like, because they're so freaking quiet when they walk. Like, there's nothing like sitting in the tree and you're doing your just left to right looking through, and all of a sudden 20 yards, there's a bear standing in an opening. It's like they're a ghost that they just appear, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's a freaking bear.
That's crazy. Have you had any like scary encounters walking in and out at the dark and having one like right in front of you?
The only one that ever got me nervous, the first year I scouted, I was walking through this thick, nasty stuff up to this cornfield in the afternoon. It's like, I think it was Labor Day weekend, and it was like 90 degrees. It was miserable hot. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get to the edge of this cornfield, and a bear ran like away from me in the cornfield. It was about six rows in, and it ran away from me. I heard it and then saw it go. And then behind it were, like, I think it was three or four cubs, real small cubs, probably 20, 30 pound cubs. And I heard her barking at them and, you know, calling them. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. You know, there they go. And I get my phone out and I'm videoing them. And I'm standing at the edge of this cornfield just in awe of the damage that's there. And I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to hunt this? And it was probably 20 or 30 seconds later, she came back out. She came out of the thick stuff, turned a corner, and was walking towards me. Well, I panicked right in the beginning because my thinking is, well, it's a sow with cubs. That's probably the most dangerous black bear there is. And I'm thinking, is this really going to happen? And I yelled at her, and she just turned around and ran away. And I think what happened was she had no idea what I was when I came up there. She just heard noise, called the cubs, got them into safety, and then came back out to see what it was. Because as I learned after, there was so many bear going to that cornfield. If a big male comes up there, she's probably going to call them away. So she wanted to see what it was.
Gotcha.
But it scared the freaking daylights out of me when she turns the corner and is walking right at me. And I'm thinking, is she really coming to you know, think the worst, whatever, but
fight you or, you know, scare you off or whatever. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense, dude. But I'll tell you what, I've never been, for some reason, bear has kind of crept into my mind throughout the course of the years. I used to take this thought process where I was like, man, I don't want to hunt over bait. Yeah. Like, I don't want to hunt over some like donuts and stuff. I want to, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it a different way. And it sounds like the way that you've kind of described is ultimately what I would want to try and do when it would come to bear hunting. Uh-huh. And so that would be one way to do it. But I do have a couple friends who go to this bear camp. Number one, they said the camaraderie at this bear camp's really fun. But the other thing that they have said that, it's kind of interest that has interested me is that like, just because there's bait there doesn't mean that there's not a giant bear also there. Uh-huh. And he's like, it is the idea of hunting over bait goes away when the bear starts to come in and you're just like, oh my God, like this is a bear. Like it's not, you know, 'cause big bucks have their own vibe, I guess you would say, about them in the hunting culture, but bear has a completely different vibe in North American hunting culture. And he's like, dude, there's nothing quite like a bear being 5 yards or maybe at the bottom of your tree stand looking up at you, or, you know, two bears are now starting to fight over the bait and things like that. It's just, he goes, there's nothing like it. And it's just a different experience for true hunters to go and experience. And so when he put it that way, I was like, yeah, I can see how that would be different and would be interesting. So it's on my list of things to do. It's not quite up there yet with all the other stuff I want to do, but I want to give it a shot at some point in my life.
And I'm fortunate because I live in a populated area for bear, and I have a lot of bear hunting opportunity. So when it first got its hooks in me, I just wanted to keep going. I mean, I have other stuff on my list I want to do, but I just want to, the first time what you just described, it got its hooks in me, and I just want to keep going. And you know, another thing, you know, you talked about the baiting hunt. There's a lot of controversy, and people want to talk bad mouthing about baiting or hunting with hounds or doing all this. And you know, it's like sitting waiting for your neighbor's dog to come out, right? And shooting a spare over a bait. And I got a giant appreciation when I started trying to do the work myself. Now, I think it's like anything else. If you pay a guide, and you go and somebody else is doing all the work, and you show up, you climb up a tree stand, you shoot an animal, there's an appreciation for that. But I understand where people come from when they want to badmouth that. Now, I have nothing against doing that, and I would do it myself now because I have a new appreciation for that. But when you get involved into this, like planning, just the way you would do for a deer, you're gonna try to set up a bait location. You're going to try to figure out, okay, here's an area that they're bedded. Here's a general food source, but I'm going to use a bait site, you know, kind of like you would put a hidey hole food plot at a spot that you're hopefully they transition through there before dark. And then you got to think about, okay, how's my access? How's my went? Like bear, here's another thing. Bear will pattern you if you do something regular. Like I'm not experienced in bear hunting, but I've talked with multiple people that bait for bear. And they say, if you do something drastically different each time you bait, let's just say you change the time, or let's say you're going up, you're changing the bait, you're changing your camera, and then you leave or something like that. And then all of a sudden you walk across and you go to and set a tree stand up and you didn't do that prepped right away, that could throw a bear off. So like you start getting into the nitty gritties and then figuring out the wind direction. And like, there is so much that goes into it if you want to be successful. People think it's just you go sit over a pile of, you know, trash and you just shoot a bear. If you want to shoot a good one, you want to have a good bear hunting experience, first of all, it's a ton of freaking work. And number two is it's no different than you plan a food plot. You go out and you put mock scrapes. You put bait out for deer and others, you know, proverbial senses. There's other stuff going on. And I've gotten such an appreciation for it. And that, what your buddy said about, there's nothing like having a bear at close range and move, there isn't, there really isn't. I'm not going to say it's better than deer hunting. I love deer hunting. I love them very equal, but it's right up there for me.
That's awesome, man. All right. Well, Mitch, man, you got me hyped about bear hunting. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to go and do this. Good vibes your way. Thank you very much. For all of you who want to find out a little bit more about Mitch and what he does, go check out his podcast over there at the Sportsman's Empire, the Pennsylvania Woodsman podcast. Go to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you download your podcasts, and you can find that along with the Nine Finger Chronicles, the Hunting Gear podcast, the How to Hunt Deer podcast, and all the other stuff that we got going on over here. Good vibes in, good vibes out. If you're going to be in a tree, wear your safety harness. Mitch, good luck this upcoming season, and we'll talk to you next time.
You too. Thanks, Dan.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.